welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week from 10 a.m. till midday New Zealand time, and excuse me, 3 till 5 p.m. Pacific, 5 till 7 Central, 6 till 8 p.m. Eastern, and 11 p.m. till 1 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time. And I just got finished editing a video last night, and you know what? I actually am the funniest protest march leader chanter that exists, I reckon. It's just freaking classic, you know? There's something about a megaphone that just makes you funnier, you know? Especially if you're being unconventional with it. Now, speaking of unconventional or UFO conventional, we have a very special guest today, ladies and gentlemen, a man who is well known throughout the UFO community. His name's Richard Dolan. He's one of the most well-known names in modern ufology, being perhaps the world's leading researcher and historian on the UFO subject. He's the author of 2 information-packed volumes of UFO history, UFOs and the National Security State, volumes 1 and 2, as well as an analysis of the future in a book called AD After Disclosure, when the government finally reveals the truth about alien contact. He is a regular guest on Coast to Coast AM radio, and he's appeared on many television specials for the History Channel, Sci-Fi, BBC, and elsewhere. Since 2012, Richard has hosted his own internet radio show, The Richard Dolan Show, which airs on KGRA Radio Saturday evenings from 8 till 11pm Eastern. Right, Richard, welcome to the program.
Hey, Vinny. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, likewise, bro. And what I also wanted to ascertain from you is sort of how you personally kind of got into this particular field. Everybody got a story. I was like to hear yours.
We've all got a story. I have mine. Man, I'm getting old now. I started doing this about 20 years ago. And back in those days, I was simply working on a doctoral dissertation in history. I figured my life was going to be teaching at a university, probably doing some kind of Noam Chomsky-like radical history teaching at some school. That was basically my path right there. And had nothing to do with flying saucers, nothing with UFOs, and nothing even really with major conspiracies. Just sort of kind of a standard critique of American policy, I guess. And then I stumbled into the UFO field. I was in a bookstore. I found one of the real classic UFO books of all time by Timothy Good, Above Top Secret. And it was always a subtitle that got my attention. And I'll never forget. It was The Worldwide UFO Cover-Up. And I will admit, I was intrigued. And I'll never forget, till the day I die, just flipping through that book for the first time, having no idea, no knowledge of UFOs, but recognizing a lot of the names in that book from my own study, my own research. And I just thought, you know, what's the deal? How is it that these look like they're real quotes from real people who seem like they're actually interested in UFOs, and yet in the academic world, this is a non-topic, doesn't exist. There's something wrong here. As a discrepancy. And that was really what got me started. That was, I think, 1993. I bought the book and I couldn't put it down. Started lurking around on what was then the internet. Looked for some UFO-related news groups and just learned and learned and learned. And the next thing I knew, I was obsessed. Totally obsessed. Trying to figure out, not were even UFOs real. I wasn't there yet. I was at a very conservative place. I just wanted to know, is this something that's part of my country's history, part of world history? If it was, how come it hasn't been written about? Is there really a cover-up? And you know how it is. One question just leads to another and to another. And that was 20 years ago. I've been digging into this field ever since.
Problem when you don't get given answers, it just leads all the questions to more questions. And right. eventually you start to find answers, don't you? Can you recall a specific time where you actually began to get clarity about what the UFO cover-up agenda was truly about? Where you start to really come to some understanding, where the questioning sort of started to slow down. You're like, wait, hold on a second. I see what's going on here.
Yeah, I think for me it was encountering released, declassified U.S. government documents. That's what really... Because that had been the one thing that I was trained to know how to read and to accept as valid evidence rather than just plain old witness testimony. Not that that doesn't mean anything. But when you get a declassified document from the U.S. Army or from the CIA that says essentially, yes, this is something that concerns us. We don't really know what we're dealing with. And there are such documents that exist. I encountered those fairly early on in my research. One of the famous ones that I think a lot of researchers know, but even today a lot of general public don't know, is famously called the Twining Memo. And it's named after a three-star U.S. general, a guy named Nathan Twining, back in 1947. He went on to get his fourth star later. He was a big shot. And Twining, in September of 1947, writes a letter to another general. This general had asked him, hey, what's up with all these flying saucers? Do I really have anything to worry about? Is this something that we're doing, or is this an actual thing? That was basically the question. And Twining's answer was a three-page memo, single-space type memo. And what he said, incredibly, was, no, it doesn't look like ours. These are things that we don't know what they are. Our military is encountering them. And then he listed a bunch of specific qualities that these objects had, like silent, disc-shaped, evasive maneuvers when encountered. And here's my favorite, actually when he described the shape in detail, domed on top, flat on the bottom. Now, ask yourself, what's supposed to exist in 1947 that's supposed to look like that, behave like that? You have a three-star general telling another general in a classified memo, no, we don't know what the hell these are. So, yes, that moment when I really dug into that memo, that was an early moment in my research, and I thought, did they ever stop being interested in this? I mean, did they ever come up with an explanation? Another logical question. And as you go through the literature, you go through the history, the answer is no, not really. They told the public many times during the 40s and 50s that there's nothing to this, nothing to see here, go on about your business, you know. But then you find in the classified discussions that were going on, no, nothing was solved at all. They were still having the same perplexed discussions, still debates, still people in the military who really thought we were dealing with extraterrestrials, by the way. That was constantly a thread in these discussions that we have access to of the 1940s and 50s. So really, what I found is that this is the most fascinating topic I could have ever stumbled into. And by the way, I stayed within the world of academia for at least a year or so after I became obsessed with UFOs. And for a while, I would bring my UFO research into the university library. And I had to be so careful. I didn't want anyone to see, God forbid, that I had a UFO book. And it was almost literally worse than having pornography. It would be like you'd be better off having a porno in the university library than a UFO book, because they think you're crazy if you have a UFO book there.
They'd think you were an academia nut.
Absolutely.
As opposed to a macadamia.
As opposed to a macadamia. Exactly. But I stayed in that world for about a year, wondering, or not wondering, but thinking, this is crazy because I'm dealing with two versions of reality. An official version of reality where the UFOs aren't supposed to exist, where they don't exist. And then this other reality that as I dug further and further in, I realized looked pretty real to me. And so we have this, like, it was like a schizophrenic reality, official truth and unofficial truth.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty well said. A schizophrenic reality. I call it the topsy-turvy world, where basically everything that's stated by an official source, you can basically assume that it's the direct opposite of what they're stating it is, and you'll 99% of the time be correct.
As crazy as that might sound to someone, I'm actually living that same dream as you are. You have to assume that deception is the rule, not the exception.
Yeah, yeah. Deception is not the exception. In fact, I'm going to put that into a song.
That's good. Yeah, just came up with a good liner, yeah.
Yeah. we'll continue on with that vein. Now, in terms of the huge, huge quantity of interviews, books you've read, appearances, public engagement speeches, you know, that kind of thing. Do you have any conclusions about what the UFO phenomenon actually means for human civilization? Or are you still trying to work out the nuts and bolts of it?
No, I have conclusions. Let's call them provisional conclusions. I always try to separate what I absolutely know from what I think I know. That's a very important thing to do. So one thing I'll never try to do is to pretend to you or to anyone that I have definite conclusions when what I have really instead are just good ideas. There are certain things I know. Here's what I know. There is a phenomenon that does exist that is that has been observed by military personnel around the world, including New Zealand, including Australian and everywhere else, that involves objects that behave in ways that are not supposed to be possible. And this has been going on for at least since World War II. In fact, when you really go back through history, if you want to forget the military part of it, you've got some really good reports that go even much farther back than that, really back into the 19th century and before. And if you really want to get into some interesting stories, there's some good ones that go back to ancient times. But let's leave those for a moment. We've got a very, very strong case throughout all of the 20th century that there's something happening. We have military documents proving that they're interested. So that's enough for a day's work to just say to the mainstream media, to say to the political institutions, someone's got something that's not supposed to exist that's extraordinary. What do I think is happening? I think that there are non-humans that are interested and engaged with humanity here on planet Earth. I think that Earth and human civilization is a fascinating place for them to check out. I think that humanity just about leap into their world with our own technological revolution is something that they're very, very interested in right now. And that's probably why there are multiple groups that are here. I would go further, and I would say that there are some groups that, for whatever reasons, are abducting or taking some human beings and they are returning them. I think that they're probably doing implants of one sort or another. I think the evidence on this is becoming pretty good. And that they probably have a permanent presence here and don't really have much interest in being openly acknowledged. They have their business here and it doesn't really involve them shaking hands with you and me as openly having diplomatic relations with humanity. That's my guess. I think they're eons ahead of us and we really are struggling just to be able to understand, much less keep up with what they're all about.
So not only are the humans covering up that the UFO phenomenon is happening at the highest levels, but also the ETs themselves are covering up their appearances as much as they possibly can. And it's been happening since ancient times. So one would lead to the conclusion that they don't ever plan on revealing themselves to humanity unless they're forced to.
That's my opinion. And what I think is happening, and when I wrote AD After Disclosure with Bryce Zabel, our conclusion was that there will be a disclosure. Actually, my conclusion was disclosure is a paradox. It's impossible, but it's inevitable. In one sense, it's impossible because there's really no motivation for the powers that be or even for these other beings to reveal themselves. But it's inevitable because the big thing that's changing in this equation is actually us, our society. We're not the way we were 100 years ago, 200 years ago, even 10 or 20 years ago. We are going through some kind of major revolution. And we're not done with that revolution. So what I actually think is happening is they are probably aware that we're getting to a point where in 20 years from now, we're going to have computers that will be incredibly intelligent and that won't need sleep. We're going to have nanotech that's off the charts. We're going to have quantum computing. We're going to have all of these other capabilities that are about to come online that actually are going to give ordinary people incredible tools with which probably to engage these other beings. And so what I think is there will be a disclosure, but only when the political powers are, and maybe these other beings, are pressed to the wall to acknowledge it.
What do you feel about Wernher von Braun saying that one of the last things that will happen before we usher in a world government is a false flag alien invasion?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I just saw Carol Rosin a couple of days ago at Joshua Tree, California, and it's Carol Rosin who is the person who has made this statement many times, and she's been quoted quite a bit about this. She was von Braun's personal secretary during his final few years of life in the 1970s. So I'm sure that he said this to her. The question that I have often asked myself is...
Oh, yeah. Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually...
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. You can check out the archives at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. My associate producer, Mal Ryan, has been getting us a huge quantity of guests talking about the paranormal, aliens, djinn, psychopaths, archons, and all of this other kind of stuff. So there's huge quantities, very, very interesting interviews there for you to listen to. And if you want to listen to them commercial free, if you're savvy, you can find them on the website. But, you know, preferably it'd be lovely if you could donate something, because, you know, we're not getting paid by advertisers or the network or anything like that in order to do the show. It's all completely volunteer, and we've got to pay the bills somehow. And the way I figure it, I'm serving humanity, and if humanity rewards me for it, I think that sounds like justice, you know? Isn't that the kind of world we want? Now, speaking of the world we want, Wernher von Braun, the man we want to know about, was he correct? Or, and again, this is based on the testimony of Carol Rosin, his assistant back in the 70s, that there would be three wars. The first war would be a Cold War with the Russians. They would hype those up in order to take people's liberties and rights away from them. Then they would hype up terrorism in order to take people's liberties and rights away from them. And then when basically liberties and rights are almost gone entirely, then they'll stage a false flag alien invasion, and then everybody will go, oh, we're humans, they're aliens. Let's have a human one world government to fight the aliens that don't freaking exist. That is at least what some of the testimony kind of breaks down to. And I wanted to get your opinion on this, because we were talking over the break about how it would be a logistical nightmare in order to pull off a global alien invasion scare.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what I said. That's what I believe. You know, there's a name that's often that goes with this type of idea. It's often called Project Bluebeam. And I think to pull off, there are false flags that happen all the time. I'll go to my grave saying that 9/11 was a false flag. I've said it publicly many times. There are all kinds of false flags that governments do, particularly my government, the United States government, has done for generations. So we can't expect it ever to be truthful, particularly on major geopolitical events like wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and whatnot. Those are all lies. Or the pretenses are lies and so on. But of an alien invasion, that's a different order of magnitude altogether. How do you do it? How do you Do you actually get your own fleet of flying saucers and start blasting buildings out from, you know, from where they stand using your fake alien technology? And then through that, you convince scientists? That's a really tough sell. You've got scientists around the world who aren't just skeptical of UFOs, but they are irredeemably hostile to the idea. And it's just not going to be the easiest thing in the world to just roll over the scientific community without showing some kind of real evidence rather than scaring the hell out of them. It seems to me much more likely that there'll be, if you're going to have false flags, they don't really need that to establish a totalitarian global police state. They're already on the way to doing that. You don't need a fake alien invasion for that.
Well, hold on a second. I'm wondering here, though, because false flags, as soon as they happen now, Boston bombing or the right. Sandy Hook shooting and so on and so forth, the alternative media exposes them instantly now. Maybe an alien invasion is kind of like the ace up their sleeve. Ha-ha, they'll never see this coming.
Well, I suppose. I find it to be a very, very difficult sell. And I cannot imagine how you would be able to continually pull it off. So even if you have like a week of alien invasion, it's alien invasion week now on planet Earth. Okay, so you're going to have alien invasion year. At a certain
it'll
point...
It'll be like Black History Month.
People will be... Exactly, but people will be waiting for like, hey, where are the aliens? And if they don't show themselves, you're going to have some explaining to do. It just seems to me that it's an unrealistically difficult
hurdle. Maybe by the time people are wondering, you know, are there real aliens, you know, why don't they show themselves kind of thing, by that time everybody's rearranged into a world government and tossed into the extermination FEMA camps. And it won't matter what evidence they demand because they'll be dead.
It's already happening. You don't really need an alien invasion to try to implement a global police state. It's already happening.
Yeah, that's
and,
true.
They can do it through fear of all types of things. Just going back to the Wernher von Braun statement that Dr. Carol Rosen has talked about for many years, as I mentioned to you before the break, I know Carol, and I just saw her a couple of days ago in the California desert at an event that we were both at. I really like her. I respect her. I certainly believe her when she says that von Braun said this to her. But it doesn't – you have to keep in mind, he would have said this in the mid-1970s. So that's what? That's almost 40 years ago. So I'm to believe, all right, von Braun did have access to classified and UFO-related material. I believe that. So that's fair enough. But did he actually know all aspects of the game plan? Did he really? And did that game plan actually extend out for 40 to 50 years of trajectory? I don't know. I mean, it's very possible he was just giving her his opinion, which is fair enough. I don't really know if I would be able, in good conscience, to take that as gospel. And I'm saying this because so many people do. So many people do. They're like, I hear this around again and again. Oh, well, von Braun said it, so it's got to be true. And the fact is,
there could be all kinds of ways of interpreting. A Nazi scientist said it, therefore it must be true.
Exactly.
Are you listening, people?
Well, von Braun's Nazi credentials, I want to be fair to the man, are, you know, it's a little bit of a mixed bag. He did work for the Nazis. But basically, during World War II, if you didn't work for the Nazis and they wanted you, you were toast. You really had no choice. He did work at Peenemünde doing the rockets and the V-2 rocket and so on. He also worked in the U.S. for many, many years. And, you know, there were a lot of unrepentant Nazis brought aboard by the U.S., but I never had the feeling that von Braun was one of those types. So I'll give the man that much credit.
Did he ever issue public apologies or statements or something like that? Like, I'm sorry, my rockets blew up half of London, etc.?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Vinny. And the truth is, I don't know if he did.
No, if we don't know that he did, I think that would be pretty common knowledge. He probably didn't.
Maybe he didn't want
the American people knowing that he was part of Operation Paperclip and had a false identity and was hijacked from the Nazi regime to come over here and head up NASA.
Well, he never came over with a false identity, to my knowledge, but like a lot of Nazis did. State Department, CIA changed a lot of those documents. Von Braun famously came over with a big cast on his arm. There's lots of pictures of him. I actually know a woman who is a Canadian citizen, wonderful lady, who came over from Germany as a baby, as an infant, and her family knew Von Braun. And she told me, she has a photograph, she's never shown it to me, but I believe her, a picture of Von Braun in his cast holding her basket at one point. So I think, I mean, Von Braun's identity was known. There were a lot of Nazi scientists who came over very secretly, but not so with Von Braun. His identity was very openly acknowledged.
Unlike the MK Ultra scientists that wound up heading up the programs in the CIA.
Those are horrific. I wrote a little bit about MKUltra in my very first book of UFOs and a National Security State. And my God, if you ever really wanted a lesson in depravity by the United States government, just look into the history of MKUltra and what they were trying to do through the 1940s and 50s and 60s and beyond. It really never truly stopped. The name of the program changed. Various departments got involved and others didn't get involved. But the whole idea of controlling, harnessing the human mind and spirit. This was absolutely critically important for these guys. You know, back in the 1950s, the CIA had a monopoly, a world monopoly of possession of LSD. You can imagine. LSD had only been invented just before the Second World War. And right after the war ended, the CIA got it. And they said, this could be are a real key in our war over the human mind. And they thought they could use this as an interrogation tool, maybe a truth serum, who knows what. And all through the 1950s, there were CIA agents who were actually tripping specialists. And that's what they did. Their job was to experiment with acid. Famously, there was a case of an American scientist, a guy named Frank Olson, back in 1953, whose drink was spiked without him knowing with LSD. And Olson had, he was a brilliant, basically a biowarfare specialist. And he had a bad, bad trip. Eventually, CIA handlers took him to a hotel in New York City where he ended up suiciding, we're told, out of the 10th floor of the hotel. We're told that this 25-year-old, big, tough, burly guy couldn't guard against little geeky, skinny Frank Olson, and that Olson just ran through a plate glass window in the hotel to his death. What I think happened is that Olson was thrown out of the window because he was a security risk, but who knows? His family sued for damages and never really got justice. But the things that they would do, sensory deprivation experiments, I mean, just for the longest period of time, people would go crazy with some of these mind control experiments under MKUltra. Super secret. Last thing I'll say about it, because it's relevant with UFOs, it's relevant with a lot of secrecy, is that to this day, we only know about MKUltra by accident. By accident, Vinny. In other words, we could just as easily to this day know really nothing about MKUltra. Because what happened is that in the early 70s, the American president, Richard Nixon, told his CIA director, Richard Helms, you're fired. I'm giving you a month to clear out your desk. Helms knew all the secrets, and he knew about MKUltra, and he basically panicked. And he told the guy directing MKUltra, destroy all records. And that guy did destroy most of the records, but not all of them. And it was because they didn't have enough time. It was only 1 month. Had he had a little more time, had they been a little more deliberate, they could have destroyed really all trace of MKUltra, and then all we would have to this day would be rumor, no proof. Just like a lot of aspects of the UFO phenomenon, we have pretty good knowledge, but we don't have an official acknowledgement.
This sounds a lot, I watched a documentary last night called Someone Else's Country. It's a documentary about New Zealand and how we got sold out to the New World Order, essentially. And we changed our voting system from first past the post, like you got in the United States at the moment, to MMP, where you got a number of different parties that are allowed to come in. And Treasury, who have been the ones who are advising and basically setting the economic policy for the New World Order in New Zealand, the day that MMP and parties that weren't already part of the fold started to come into Parliament, Treasury employees were called into work early that morning to start shredding documents, and they didn't stop until almost every single document was shredded.
Wow, fascinating.
Yeah. Isn't this what happens? The government does two things with documents: keeps them on everything, or destroys them in the case that they're damaging, that people might find out about it.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely. It's disheartening. It's sad that this happened in New Zealand, which I do think worldwide still has a reputation for being this kind of wonderful paradise type of a place. I've met a number. Well, hey, I'm an outsider, dude. What do I know? But I have met a few people.
Here's what you know. America is the home of the free and the land of the brave, and you know that's a lie, and it's complete opposite of whatever they say it is. People say that New Zealand's a land of opportunity, a land of milk and honey, a land of freedom, a land of choice. It's the direct opposite of everything they say it is, too. So you know just as much about New Zealand as the average New Zealander does, because you know that most things are a lie.
Thanks for the tip. I'll still look forward to visiting your country sometime.
Yeah, man. We've got good sandwiches here.
Well, great. So we certainly agree on the nature of the lies and of deceptions and of the difficulties that ordinary people are going to have in penetrating the truth. And, you know, for me, I often, you know, wonder why do I want to focus on the UFO aspect of it? There's any number of other conspiracies, any number of other things I could be working on. And in fact, I do. I mean, I don't just really confine myself to UFOs, but on the other hand, that's really the thing that I know best. And so I do try to go with my strengths. I do feel the UFO cover-up is extremely important. I think that a lot of other conspiracy analysts really underrate it. I certainly think that a lot of the students of, even the few students of Black Budget America, don't appreciate just how important the UFO cover-up is in the creation of the black budget system that we have. In fact, I would say it's fundamental. And beyond that, I think that when you really explore all facets of the UFO phenomenon, and it has just grabbed hold of me and pulled me in to its clutches, it transforms your worldview in really significant ways.
Yeah. I think that's a good point to go to break on. Changing your worldview in really significant ways. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, when was the last time your worldview was challenged and changed? Huh? You know, I think that I don't like going more than a month or two. Maybe 6 months is about as much as I can tolerate not having my worldview radically changed. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. And my very special guest is Richard Dolan. Now, I wanted to get into this UFO conference that you were just recently in, Contact in the Desert UFO conference, and there's a huge quantity of very, very top-level exopolitical researchers and whatnot. Well, I've got a whole list of them here. Michael Sella, Jim Mars, Travis Walton, Carol Rosen, Laura Eisenhower, David Sarita, Michael Tellinger, David Wilcock, William Henry, Michael Cremo, James Gilliland, Roger Lear, Alfred Weber, and Paolo Harris, and many others. And I'm just wondering, is there behind-the-scenes conversations that happen between... I know that I have behind-the-scenes conversations with other radio show hosts, the things that don't normally go out on air. Then we have really interesting things. And I was wondering, what kind of things do UFO researchers talk about behind the scenes that they don't normally come out with on air? I mean, if that's not a difficult question.
No, that's a great question. Glad you asked it. There's always conversations that I'll have with different researchers that are usually off the cuff or usually in private. One of my favorite people that I like to get together with is Jim Mars. Jim was at the conference, and we're pretty good friends. I'm trying to think who I actually had long conversations with in terms of like other researchers. I chatted a bit with Michael Tellinger of South Africa this time. I hadn't really had a long talk with Michael before, but I had a very good conversation with him. But I'm really trying to think, in this conference, was there a lot of behind the scenes, like deep talk? What really happens, it does happen. Not so much at this particular conference, but you'll often get researchers that will share different stories with each other pretty much on the down low, just like, I'll tell you this thing confidentially, and you tell me that thing confidentially. That does happen. I think I did have a conversation or two with... I'm trying to think. Most of the good conversations I had last weekend were with attendees. And here's the thing about these conferences. I always learn more from the attendees, I feel, than they can ever possibly learn from me. I'm in a lucky position where I've gathered together a lot of information, and I have a lot of it in my head, and I can remember things very well. I've got a good memory for UFO information, and I try to put it all together in a way that makes sense, so people tell me that they like that. That said, people will come into these conferences with tremendous amounts of information that they want to share with someone, whether it's an amazing sighting or encounter experience that they've had, and you get a lot of that, or whether it's someone who has had access to some very, very sensitive information. One thing I guess that I'll mention is I had a conversation with one person. I have to be a little bit vague on this, but who told me of a very, very good source of his that dealt with two types of things. One is off the charts, off the charts technology that we have a few scientists now looking at that are, we're talking nanotechnology that is beyond anything we can imagine. That was one. And then another, having to do with underground facilities, clandestine underground bases and facilities that I was chatting with this individual about. And all of it is very consistent with other types of research that I've been doing over the years. But I guess, long story short, yes, there are definitely private conversations that take place at these, and often that's really more interesting to me than any of the public stuff that I do. This particular one, though, I'm not trying to get out of answering, and I'm not really thinking of deep conversations that I had with some of the other researchers. I chatted nicely with Jim Mars, chatted a little bit with George Norrie. Tellinger, I really, really enjoyed meeting with him, and I finally got a very good, strong handle on just why his work is so important. I think I've become a fan of Michael Tellinger. And this is a guy who, what he does is he analyzes stone circles in South Africa. These are ancient stone circles that, you know, in his own view, he ties it in together with the research of Zachariah Sitchin, who's another one who he's deceased now, but Sitchin did a lot of work analyzing ancient Sumerian cuneiform tablets and basically argued that humanity was the creation of the race of extraterrestrial god beings known as the Anunnaki and created a slave race of humanity in southern Africa to mine for gold. And Tellinger believes that these very, very bizarre stone circle formations that he has been investigating may in fact be related to that. And I thought, you know what? You've got some pretty interesting research there. So we'll take a look at it. This conference, in a lot of ways, is a little bit off the beaten path from the kind of thing that I normally do, Vinny. This is a very New Agey conference. I'm not saying that I have no sympathy for that type of a perspective, but there is a lot of lectures on kind of raising your frequency and your vibration. This is not really a language that I normally employ in my own work. So there is that whole aspect of it, which was very wonderful and lovely, but it's just not really what I do. And there was, you know, a certain amount of it, which I would say was very political and dealing with conspiracies and things like that, which are the kind of stock and trade that I like to work with. I enjoyed the conference, though, and it was very nicely designed and set up. And the last thing I guess I could say about it is I didn't feel like I was trapped in a prison hotel, which is what most of these are like. This was sort of a nice open space, more like a campus out in the California desert in a very, very pleasant environment. Good place to be for a weekend. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, it's always good to be around other people who are respected researchers and so on and so forth, because usually it's just about friendliness and having fun, and you realize that everybody's really human. What I found is very interesting is a lot of listeners to big shows and what have you, they come to idolize hosts, they come to idolize researchers, and then when they come up and speak to you, they have this idea in their head of what you are and how you think and what have you, and they almost treat you like you're not just another human, just like them, kind of thing, like you're a cut above or whatever, and the reality is far different from that. It's just, you know, we're just doing different things with our lives to most people.
Exactly right, and I get treated like that. I won't lie. I won't hide the fact that there will be people who come up to me and they treat me with this. It's nice to get respect. Don't get me wrong, but I emphasize this, and I did it all last weekend. I did it on stage and I did it in person. I said, "Look, I'm not above you. I'm not above anybody. We're all in this together. We all have to support each other. I have to support you as much as I want you to support me. We have to share information." And for my part as a researcher, this is a very important part of my philosophy. It's that I never, ever want to put a reader or a listener into a position where they have to trust me, like trust my information. In other words, everything that I research, everything that I do ought to be, at least in theory, searchable by you. Everything that I put out there should be amenable to a fact check. And you should have the ability to prove or disprove everything that I say. If I start going out there with one inside source after another, basically what that means implicitly is I'm putting myself above you and I'm saying, trust me, I'm a little bit better because I got these cool people who are giving me all this information. And I don't really like that. I don't like rolling that way. And I don't think that's a very productive way for this community of ours to move ahead, because we're already on the fringe. And we have to respect each other, work together. And that means we have to be rigorous in our data so that 99% of the information that I work with is publicly available, whether through government archives or through other people's research and through my own analysis. But I don't almost ever toss out information that someone else, such as yourself, can't, at least in theory, be able to fact check or look into. There have been a few individuals I've spoken to that have come to me on conditions of anonymity and privacy who have told me some pretty earth-shattering things. And every time that I get something like that, I mean, I have to be careful with how I treat it. I never want to overdo that sort of aspect of it, but it does happen. There are such people.
All right, well, we're coming into a break now. Now, when we come back, we want to talk about abductions. Now, we've had a number of people on the show, Rosemary Allen Guiley, Eve Logan, James Bartley, just to name a few. Many people have come forward saying that they've been abducted, whether that be by aliens or trans-dimensional beings or black ops, etc. And whatnot, and we wanted to get your thoughts about what these operations actually mean whether or not they're really going on, in your opinion. So, Richard Dolan is my guest, ladies and gentlemen. Hour number two coming up after the break. Visit the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You can listen live there, you can join in the chat room, and you can also listen and download the archives there too. Back in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which, according to the Prime Minister, is good for the economy because now everybody can get a part-time job as an energy saver light bulb. And my very special guest is Richard Dolan, coming at us from the eastern seaboard of the United States, the Hurricane Sandy Hook epicenter. And I wanted to get that perspective from you now about abductions. There's so many stories about abductions out there. You know, my conclusion is, oh yeah, abductions are happening, and they're happening numerous times all over the place. Americans tend to talk about them a heck of a lot more because, you know, it's in freedom of speech and so on and so forth. But the rest of the world, they kind of hush up about it a little bit, you know. Like in Europe, for example, you start coming out and saying that you're a UFO abductee, people think you're fucking nuts. You have a hell of a lot more warm reception in the United States to this kind of information. And of course, this is where a lot of the major UFO conferences are held, of course, in the United States, because it's just got that kind of vibe, man. What is your perspective on why people are being abducted? Are they aliens? Are they interdimensional entities? Or are they just, you know, military black ops dressed up in spacesuits and stuff like that, trying to freak people out and induct them into some kind of crazy MK Ultra mind control experiment?
Yeah, great question. Well, I think there are definitely abductions that do take place, and we have to ask ourselves who is behind them. I think there are definitely military abductions. In my opinion, this is something that does happen. But I am of the opinion that there are just too many of these encounters, and they're just not all military. And there's too much going. Let me give you a perfect example why I believe this is happening. First of all, you have a lot of literature. You have a lot of research done by very well-known abduction researchers, going back to people like Bud Hopkins and John Mack and individuals today. But I myself have interviewed a number of individuals that I think were abductees. And I don't do hypnotic regression. I don't get into that much, but I'm a pretty good listener. I know how to keep someone calm, and I'm not bad at getting them to tell me what they remember as far as they can remember it. And here's something that I've noticed with all of these individuals, is that there are significant memory blocks that are put in there. Now, someone is doing this because they don't want these people to remember, but inevitably the memories come out. Two cases in point, I just want to emphasize how traumatic abductions are to people and why they're not a big joke. Like a lot of comedians and other people will make fun of this. And they really, they shouldn't. I chatted on one occasion with a woman who I think is about 60, a science writer.
Could I interject here for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's like making fun of a rape victim.
Absolutely, you know, it is.
It's not funny.
Because these are people who, I'll tell you two very quick stories here. In both cases, I was the first person that either of these individuals spoke to. It was a man and a woman. And it had been 30 and 40 years, respectively. And they just had lived with this experience, not knowing who to go to. In the case of the woman, she was about 60, a very intelligent, well-traveled person who is published, a published author. And she told me of an event that happened 40 years before when she was about 20 years old on a date with a guy, and she started hyperventilating within 5 minutes of telling me. She actually, her heart was racing. She, I had to tell her like three or four times, calm down, calm down, calm down. We had so many stops and starts of this interview. We finally got it done. And what ended up happening is that she had missing time from this experience. I think in her case, it was about two and a half hours of missing time. And a more frightening one was in the case of this man that I spoke to. It was a truck driver, and he had an event that was 30 years before. By the way, that woman had many, many multiple experiences throughout much of her life. This truck driver was out fishing with some people late at night in Ohio. He was a young guy. And the last thing that he remembered with these three other people was in their fishing boat was this bright light coming right down after it had been maneuvering. And then the next thing he remembered was the four of them standing on the shore screaming, seeing this huge disc-shaped craft above them, screaming, "It's coming for us." And then it takes off. And that's when they discovered they had three, I think possibly 4 hours of missing time. And this guy said, as they were going home, "If any of you ever discuss this, ever, I'll call you a liar, I'll deny it, because we are never supposed to talk about this, ever." And as he was telling me the story, he said, "I have no idea, Richard, why I felt the need to do that, except that I think that they implanted some kind of like moral imperative inside me to make me never discuss this again. So that if he ever felt that he was even thinking of it, it was almost like committing a crime. You know, you just put it out. But somehow the memories leaked through." This is an intense, awesome capability that is being done to these people. I don't think all of these abductors are human military black ops. I think some may be. But we're talking about exotic technology, really, really off the charts. The last example, I don't want to just keep throwing one abduction story after another at you. But there was a famous case known as the Allagash abduction. Anyone who's familiar with the literature has heard of this. It took place in the 1970s. Four guys on a fishing trip in the state of Maine, which is all wilderness, lots and lots of wilderness. And these guys are out there for days. And the four of them had a very, very intense, profound experience. They did go through hypnotic regression. I know two of these guys personally, had very, very long conversations with them. And all I can say is their memories are clearly that of dealing with non-human entities aboard what can only be described as a kind of flying saucer craft. Now, is it a screen memory put in by human abductors? I suppose it's possible, but I would just ask, really? Like that well, that many times? It doesn't make any sense to me. What makes much more sense is that you've got others, whoever they are, they're not us. There are too many of these. And they're not all American stories. There are abduction stories from around the world. So if this is a U.S. black op, they're sure getting around. There have been a couple of surveys done by abduction researchers that seem to indicate this is a lot more widespread than people realize. Now, those are controversial conclusions. I will grant you that. But my own opinion is that there's a lot going on here that we're not acknowledging. That is pretty widespread. And I just don't think it's all human black ops. I think some of it is. And I think the reason that it is because some of these people that are taken are persons of extreme interest. On one hand, certainly you might take them for reasons of counterintelligence. You want to find out what are these ETs doing, for example. Or maybe the aliens and the black budget people are taking these people for the same reason. Some of these people seem to have very good psychic gifts, for example. They seem to be of interest for one or another reason. And it seems to me entirely possible that the human black budget military is just as aware of these people with gifts as some of these, let's call them aliens, might be, if that's what they are. It's a crazy, crazy phenomenon. I mean, this is the fringe of the fringe. UFOs are fringe enough in our society. Abductions, people have to realize it took many, many, many years for researchers to even acknowledge that there were such things as alien abduction. It took a long time for researchers to come around to this idea. It's pretty entrenched now, but it took many decades.
Now, I wonder if that's true what you say, if they're looking for persons of interest, that would mean that both aliens and the black ops people have persons of interest of their own agendas, you know, their own persuasions. What is it that they're looking for? Okay, because I remember this this movie, Eight-Legged Freaks, about giant spiders, and there's this section in it where there's a radio host in this small little town, and he's kind of like this crazy conspiracy guy or whatever, and he's like, let's talk about the anal probe. What are they looking for up there?
Right.
And it just reminded me of it now, because it's like, what are they looking for?
Well, I think one agenda that I agree is happening is that of biological manipulation. Probably the most famous researcher who's really hit this theme is David Jacobs. I know David. He lives in Philadelphia. He's written a number of books, interviewed and regressed a lot of individuals. It's his opinion that there is a program to develop a hybrid human-alien species to enable these other beings to live here on Earth without really much of a hassle. Because, I mean, you think about it on that level. If you and I were to go to another planet, it's unlikely that we would be able to walk around on the surface of that world. I mean, you've got different solar radiation, you've got different bacteria, all of these things. So you would want to maybe customize your species so that you could do that. That's what Jacobs believes. I think that there's probably something to that.
So are you saying it's kind of like a reverse Anunnaki type thing? Like Anunnaki came here and manipulated us to become a slave species, and now the aliens are coming here to kidnap people so that they can genetically manipulate themselves so that they can come here?
Yeah, good way to put it. I think that's probably how Jacobs would put it, or at least along those lines. I have a couple of personal problems with it. I don't find that it's a perfect theory. One reason that I don't is because I have encountered a number of individuals who have themselves encountered human-looking beings that are not human, in my opinion. So, in other words, you don't need hybrids when you have completely human-looking beings that I think are actually not us. And there's a number of these stories that I have come across. So I don't really see the logic of an alien hybrid, unless maybe it's a different alien species. Who knows is doing that? I mean, anything's possible in this thing. We're still pressing our face against the glass into a dark room, and we can't really see everything. But I think one reason that there are persons of interest, I want to get back to that, is that it seems to me that a key dimension, a key aspect of the UFO phenomenon, is that these other beings have some sort of mastery over space-time itself. And I know this is getting real science fiction-y for some people, but we have to remind ourselves that our own contemporary physics is showing us that our common sense notions of what is space and what is time really don't apply anyway. And that these other beings, if you go through the research, you go through the reports, they do seem to have a way of manipulating space and time in ways that ordinarily we can't. Moreover, that there is an important telepathic connection that some of these beings are able to have with some of us. You get this again and again and again. And I will just share with you, I've told this from time to time, but not frequently, I myself had two UFO sightings in my life where I felt that the object or whatever it was somehow got into my head. I absolutely feel that way. It wasn't a clear conscious thing. On one occasion, I was simply walking with my family, and I said, "Hey, wouldn't it be cool if we looked up and saw a UFO?" And Shazam, there it was, something zooming across the sky. What are the odds? And it went behind a very thin patch of clouds, and it never came out from behind that cloud. My daughter, who was very young at the time, got a little nervous. I had another experience where I was watching this intensely bright object in the sky right where I live in Rochester, New York. And I had this crazy idea that if I turned away from this object, even for an instant, I would never see it again. It was an idea that made no sense. There was nowhere for this thing to hide. And yet for about 1 second, I turned away, and sure enough, it was gone. Crazy, 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 crazy. So I think that I'm getting back to this persons of interest thing here. There is a telepathic connection to these sightings. There have been so many UFO reports where a person will say, kind of like what I just said, I felt that this thing was responding to my thoughts and so forth. So what that means is that if you are someone of great psychic ability or gifts, it's my opinion that everyone's got some psychic ability and some are maybe kind of not that great and others are real virtuosos with it. So if you were really excellent, you might be someone that they'd be interested in studying for whatever reason. And that would include by black budget people too, because they would know that a true understanding of psi phenomena is necessary for truly understanding this UFO phenomenon. This has been a conclusion, by the way, that the intelligence community came to back in the 1950s. They understood that the mental aspects of UFOs, that's the words that they use, were key. And so it's my own theory that some of these individuals who are taken because they probably have psychic gifts.
Is there some kind of psychic defense that people have been ever able to put up to prevent themselves from being abducted?
There are people who claim that there are certain ways to defend yourselves against abduction. I have personally never encountered what I feel is truly persuasive evidence that this is possible. That's my opinion. There are Christians, a very, very large subgroup in the abduction research field are, let's say, Christian evangelicals. Surprising, because you'd think Christians would just look at all of the UFO phenomenon as either imaginary or as demonic. And actually, many of them look at it as demonic. That's their opinion. And it is also their contention that invoking the name of Jesus Christ will prevent the abduction. This is not my opinion, but whatever works, you know, works for you. So if it happens to work for you, I do think that what may be the case at times is that if you're dealing with what is ultimately a spiritual encounter, and some people believe that's really what's happening with abductions, then a very strongly held spiritual belief that tries to banish them, whether it's Christian or anything else, that maybe that's what's working. Again,
does that mean that
we don't really know the answers?
I wonder if aliens are actually part psychic themselves, and indeed actually have very similar stimuli, and indeed can be caused pain by human beings thinking certain things or saying certain words or whatever, you know. I wonder if anybody's ever made an alien laugh for that matter, you know. Tell them a joke, you know. Hey, bro, how do you patch up your broken spaceships? With abduct tape. We'll be right back after the break.
Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations. I'll let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations. Have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile by satellite. By satellite, and I can hit a target through a telescope, through a telescope, through a telescope, and I can end up.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Richard Dolan. And what are your thoughts on that statement that I made just before we got on a break about, you know, making aliens laugh or being able to communicate with them? Because there are a lot of people out there who believe that there is a positive alien agenda, you know, the Pleiades or something. And I don't know. Some people that I speak to about this, I don't know, it's like they make my head hurt, not because I don't believe what they're saying or anything like that. It seems to be this tonal thing, this tone of voice. this sort of ethereal, new agey sort of mumbo jumbo mumbling, if you know what I mean. And it actually irritates me to the point of stabbing myself in the head with a screwdriver to make it stop.
I know exactly what you mean, Vinny. Here in the States, and I just came from California, where that attitude rules. That's the dominant attitude. And, you know, I feel like in my own approach to that, I walk a fine line, because I do think that modern contemporary science does enable us to open the door to some of these crazy ideas about, you know, I got a psychic impression, or so-and-so is a channeler and you really need to listen to this. And I mean, this is really not the way my mind works. I work on the basis of evidence. I'm a historian and I'm a journalist. And that's really how you operate. That's obvious. And so I'm never comfortable with that type of information. That's really my fundamental issue. When you're dealing with alien intentions, are they good? Are they well-disposed to us or not? That's just something that you really... No one, I think, is going to know for sure. The only thing we can do is glean as much information as we can from sources that we think we may trust, such as people have been abducted, or at least we think have been abducted, who may have something to say about it. You know, we're really going on our gut. I've not been inside an alien spaceship, not to my knowledge. I haven't spoken to an alien, to my knowledge. So I can't really tell you my impressions. What I can say that I think, just based on the, let's call it the data that's come to me, we'll call it that, that some of these beings are artificially created. My own opinion is that what we call the grays are, at least in part, artificially created organisms. And as crazy as that sounds, think about it. We're on the verge right now of being able to just do that ourselves. I think what actually is going to happen is we're probably 20, 30 years away from creating at the nanoscale, basically printing a kind of artificially intelligent organism, you know, right down from the level of DNA right on up. And I have a feeling that that's really what the grays are. My feeling is that these beings are able literally just to create a biological / artificial organism to look like almost anything they want. And it very well may be that is why we see such a wide range of types, because they don't operate the way that we do. They don't operate on the basis of just standard evolutionary design. Why do they need to, when they can just create whatever they want? Their psychology, you have some individuals who, during an abduction experience, will get an experience where this being comes right into their head. They feel like it peers right into their soul. It's a very unsettling experience. So it's like these entities are able to almost like shine a spotlight into the deepest recesses of your mind in a way that is very deeply upsetting to people. But that doesn't mean that these beings are evil or malicious. I mean, basically what you get is all types of descriptions. There are individuals who feel that they've been psychically or even physically raped, and you get people who feel that their encounters with these other beings have been absolutely positive, and that we're dealing with literally with our space brothers who are here to provide enlightenment and help humanity move to the next level of its development, and everything in between. Everything in between. It's so confusing, and I guess the main thing I would just tell people is be cautious. It's okay that we don't know certain things. we're still in a situation where we're kind of outmatched by this phenomenon. We don't like to see that, or we don't like to say that, but we are not in a position where we really are getting all of the information that we want. And my guess, by the way, is that the black budget world, sometimes what I refer to as the breakaway civilization that I do believe is managing this, I actually don't think that they have all of the answers either. I think that they may be trying, they may be scrambling, but I think that this reality is probably just beyond the horizon of what maybe even we are able to understand at this particular time. That may not be the case in another 50 years. As I was saying earlier, I'm trained as a historian, but I like to think about the future. And on that basis, I think that we're reinventing our entire civilization right now in terms of computing. We're doing like this off the charts exponential growth. So it's very possible in 30 years or maybe less, we'll actually have an ability to interact with these other beings in ways that we can't even imagine right now. That's a possibility. But right now, I think we're still definitely outmatched, and it's very hard. It's very hard to get definite information. Whenever I meet a researcher who acts as though they do, I have a really hard time giving them any credibility.
Well, if that's the case, then if we don't really know, if there's some kind of a breakaway situation, it occurs to me that every civilization has some kind of underlying intention, whether it's clearly stated and put out in documents or not, that there'll always be certain individuals who will be at the top brass, as it were, who have their own thoughts and their own ideas that may or may not be sane entirely, and pursue those objectives regardless of its cost.
You're talking about individuals within an alien civilization. Is that what you're saying? Did I understand you correctly?
And or human.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. You know, regarding these aliens, it's not necessarily that they all follow a hive mind. And there may be, you know, a wide range of these individuals. There's a wide range of human beings. Why wouldn't there be a wide range of these other beings as well? I do want to finish my thought. I probably should have mentioned this earlier, but, you know, here I am saying that we really don't have a lot of knowledge, but I will just give you my feeling that we are probably dealing with a number of other groups that are able to be here and that are here observing us, very possibly with different agendas, not necessarily conflicting agendas, but they just may be interested in different things. Earth is a wonderful place. We have water, we have all kinds of great natural resources. We have this abundance of life and abundance of forms of DNA. And if you know how to manipulate DNA, this is a great place to be. And then there's humanity, which may have certain things of real interest to these other beings. I mean, aside from the fact that we're probably the greatest show in this quadrant of the galaxy right now at this moment, as we're about to jump right into their world. But it has been suggested, and I just will put this out there, and I don't really know if it's true because I don't think it's provable. But I chatted with a researcher over the last weekend who said, look, the reason that they're fascinated with us is because we have souls and they don't. Well, is that really the case? I don't really know if that's the case. But I can say that there's something about humanity that could be very, very interesting to these other beings, if nothing else, our emotions. I think our emotions could be a truly fascinating thing for another species. Think of it this way. Let's say another species, they're so far advanced, they have mastered space-time in some way, and maybe from our perspective, they might almost seem omniscient. Well, if you're in that position, is it possible that you would actually be bored with reality? That maybe there wouldn't be any great mysteries. But what do we do? We exist within a space-time reality where we're still in the process of exploring. And that could be a very interesting thing for other beings who, I mean, it's a crazy thought, but they might be getting their rocks off by just looking at us vicariously and thinking, wow, those humans are pretty interesting. It's like, you know, this section of the universe's best reality show. I wonder. It doesn't have to be.
I think that in the end, everything comes back to the beginning. And human beings, despite the fact that we're already here and we've figured out so much stuff and have all this cool technology and whatnot, there are still many people who are still looking into the origins of our life, how technology came about and what its effect is and so on and so forth. So it's not outside of the realms of possibility that an intelligent extraterrestrial species would be looking at us as though we were an earlier version of themselves in order to learn about themselves.
Yeah, right, exactly. I think it's a possibility. You know, going through the many, many abduction reports that we have, I don't really feel that we get a completely consistent story. What we get are variations. There are stories, for example, of human-looking and non-human-looking captors working together. There's a number of these. Probably the best known of them is the famous Travis Walton case. And I happen to know Travis very well. This is a case known as the Fire in the Sky case. As a young man in the 70s, he's hit with a beam of blue light. And his friends who are there, they take off. They think he's dead. Anyway, he's gone for 5 days. That all happened. He was gone for 5 days. And his memory, such as it is of non-human and human-looking beings on the same craft, apparently working together. Now, how does that make any sense? Can that be true? And if so, then who are they? What is their origin? How did all of this happen? We don't have any answers for this. We have no answers. What we have are just theories. That's all I can do is come up with theories. And I have a few, but, you know, I have no knowledge.
Could you divulge? I mean, hypothetically speaking, mm-hmm. Why would non-human entities be working with human-like entities?
Well, best reason I can think of is that thousands of years ago, some of them arrived here and they thought, well, if we deal with these humans directly, we're going to scare the hell out of them. So let's scoop up our own group. We'll breed them. We'll genetically enhance them. We'll put little chips in them and we'll make them so that they can really work with us and so that they actually have nothing in common with those natives on the planet, except that they'll look like them and they won't freak them out so much. And that's actually what I think. So when you get stories of humans encountering the so-called blonde Nordic type of ET, which you may have heard of, this is one of the big kind of themes in abduction literature. I think that's a possibility. That's what we're dealing with. As I mentioned earlier in the show, I had a couple of conversations with individuals who encountered totally human-looking beings, but who were so intensely telepathic. So intensely telepathic that it just seemed unlikely that these were normal human beings and that they actually may have been these types of beings. One of the sources for this was a retired U.S. Air Force colonel and a PhD who had such an encounter with his wife in a Las Vegas casino. Another source was a woman, a very nice kind of middle-class suburban lady, talking with her and her husband. She told me of a story when she was at church as a teenager way back in the 60s, encountering two beautiful blonde male-female in her church, dressed impeccably, and she heard them in her mind. She heard them in her mind, just like this colonel heard this other perfect blonde couple in his mind in this Las Vegas casino. What's going on with these stories? In both cases, the couples were thinking to each other. And in both cases, the female of the couple was able to determine that they were being listened to by the human. And in the case of the colonel, that this woman basically thought to him, said, just go away. You have nothing to do with us. This is none of your need to know. Beat it. And then he heard them thinking about him, saying, well, he's not part of the program. He has no need to be part of it. Just ignore him. He's not important. The woman in her church basically had the same type of encounter. She's watching these two people in front of her in the church, and they're literally, she says, she heard them in her mind and they're thinking, well, it seems like we're fitting in here pretty well, except the girl behind us can hear us. That's literally what she heard. At the end of that church service, by the way, they got out really fast. She decided to follow them. Now, she was a 15-year-old girl. Her mother was oblivious to the whole situation and was calling after her, but she kept going. And she saw them go into the woods with this very odd-looking man, a very tall-looking fellow, and they all went into the woods.
Were they all tall, blonde aliens, eh? I wonder if they've ever, you know, tried to abduct any tall, blonde celebrities or something like that. Or maybe they don't abduct people who already have their own implants. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's our final segment here with Richard Dolan, and we've got a lot of things to get through in this last segment. Firstly, to wrap up that story with the tall blondies.
Well, it's a fascinating story. It's just regarding the Air Force colonel who told me. Well, essentially, what happened was he was with his wife and a psychic friend of theirs in a Las Vegas casino, one of the nice ones. And the psychic grabbed his arm, pointed to this beautiful blonde woman. Of course, Vegas has a lot of beautiful blonde women, but this one was somehow different. And she said, "She's not like us. She's not human." And that woman, the psychic, and his wife went down an escalator, and they were scared. He's watching the blonde woman, and that's when he hears her thinking into his head. She's saying, "Go away, just beat it, you have nothing to do here." And she's then joined by an equally beautiful blonde man. They're obviously a couple. They walk down the escalator, and he gets behind them, and he's hearing them think the whole time. He's not part of the program, he has no need to know, et cetera, just ignore him. Then they walk away. This psychic friend of his also did hypnotherapy, and they agreed that she was going to put him through hypnotherapy so he could remember all of the things that they were telling him that this blonde couple were talking about. So they go there a couple of days later to this psychic woman's home, and she's trying to regress him. He's lying down on a couch, and they're hearing all of this bizarre noise outside her house, which lives at a dead end, and it's almost always quiet. They're hearing jackhammers and helicopters and construction equipment. They go outside, and there's nothing there. They were not able to do the regression that day. He says, "No problem. I'm going to be back in your area next month, and let's do it then." She said, "Fine." A month later, he calls this psychic friend of his. He said, "Look, I'm going to be in town tomorrow. How about we do that regression?" And she, according to this colonel and his wife, who was there telling me the same story, this friend of theirs had no recollection whatsoever of the encounter. She had no recollection that she had tried to do a regression a month before. She had no recollection of the blonde couple in the Vegas casino, nothing. It was as if someone was monitoring her and they wiped her memory. Chilling story. Who did the memory wipe? Was it the blonde telepathic beings, or was it some covert black ops group? Your guess is as good as mine.
There's been a lot of stories that there are aliens actually working with the U.S. government. I believe I had a guest on said when he was working on an Air Force base or something real close to Area 51, that there were these tall white aliens kind of thing that they were working with.
That's very similar. That's Charles Hall.
Yeah.
And yes, I'm certainly familiar with his story. This is a type of theme, an idea that is out there. It just will not go away.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of the things that will not go away, you're certainly not going away at all by any means. And in fact, you've rebrandishing yourself to a degree. Your website's changing from keyholepublishing.com, right, which is now directed to the new website, richarddolanpress.com. And what many people won't be aware of is that you actually publish a lot of other researchers' books, for example, Eve Lorgan's book.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
On top of that, you've got your own radio show, the Richard Dolan Show on KGRA, which is kgraradio.com. And you've even got a new book in the works. And I'd like to spend the last couple of minutes that we have here divulging to the audience a little bit of a teaser, a preamble, if you will, as to what your new book is about and when it might be released so people can get their hands on it.
Yeah, thank you, Vinny. I do publish books by other fabulous authors, and all of that information, you can just go to richarddolanpress.com and you could look those up. I'm very proud of those works, and I'm proud of the fact those authors want to come to me to have me publish their work. It does me honor. I continue to stay very busy. There will eventually be a third volume in my history of UFOs and the national security state. I'm very dedicated to doing that. But right now I've got a new book that's coming out that I'm very excited about, and it's called UFOs for the 21st Century Mind. And I would say think of it as a fresh new introduction to the entire field. If you have a friend who's a skeptic on UFOs and you want to give them one good book on the subject to get them really immersed in it, I would suggest that this is the book. Or just any individual who wants to get a contemporary, fresh approach to the entire subject of UFOs. So not simply the history, not simply ancient aliens to modern UFOs, not simply the politics of the cover-up, but I have all of those in there, not simply the experience of abduction and contact, although that's in there, and I have a lot of analyses of that whole phenomenon. But also the science of the UFOs. In other words, everything that makes this subject fascinating, from propulsion science right up through the science of consciousness itself and space-time. I try to handle all of those issues in a fresh way so that when someone is just getting into this field and they really want to know what matters and what does not matter in this field, this is really my attempt to do so. I have a whole section on philosophy of what actually constitutes a UFO, particularly in an era of drones everywhere and unmanned aerial vehicles. How do you really know what is a UFO? How do we not lose our heads in an era of YouTube videos that are going out by the thousands of UFOs, or the latest Facebook rumor that's copied and pasted onto your wall? How do we think critically in this era? And then I have a chapter that really deals with the future, the disclosure era. How will we get to disclosure and what next? I did write a book about that, but I continue to refine my thoughts on that. So really what this is, it's a book that deals with the sum total of the UFO phenomenon, not any one little section, but it does it, I think, in a sophisticated way, at least I like to think it is, and also in a way that reads well. It's a nice 300-page book. It's not a big, fat 600-page book like my histories are, which I think might tend to intimidate someone every now and then. This is a nice, slim, but a meaty book nonetheless. And it will be out in about a month. Earlier this afternoon, before I talked with you, I was in the process of doing final edits to the very final chapter.
It's this close. Really, to coming out. What was the name of the book again? I've got down here, UFOs for the 21st Century Mind. Is that the title?
That's exactly it. And unless I change it at the last minute, but that's what I've been settled on for a while. Yeah, it's basically now, understanding an old phenomenon in a new era, which is what we're on. We're in a new era.
I wonder what would happen to humanity if disclosure actually happens. I mean, would people freak out or would they just be like everything else that happens nowadays? You've seen so many movies, you've watched so many TV shows that when it comes out and says that it's real, they just go, yeah.
Well, we could talk about this for 2 hours easily, Vinny. I think you would get some freak out without a doubt. Look, I don't know about you, but I have relatives and I know that I love them, but some of them would just not handle this very well. Others would. But the real issue is not whether people individually spaz out or not. The real issue has to do with the implications of the truth coming out and how that would truly rock our world. In other words, just imagine, all right, that something happens that forces the hand of the United States president to make an admission, either a major sighting or some kind of WikiLeaks type of event where something sensitive comes out and it cannot be denied. I think that we're moving closer and closer toward that type of a situation where his hand will be forced. So if it is forced, a couple of things. One, you can be sure he's going to lie his ass off about it to the extent that he has to control spin and to maintain control over the situation. Yes, obviously. But even so, it's going to be very difficult to contain this. People will want to know, A, who are we dealing with? He may not have answers for that. Then they'll want something that he should be able to answer, which is, how the hell did you keep this secret all these years? How have you managed our media, our journalistic our journalists, our academic world, our scientists, our political institutions.
And then they'll come out and they'll say, well, actually, we've got Department of Defense people in every single major newsroom across the United States controlling and spinning what stories we tell them to do.
Yes, that's right, or that will come out. And I like to think people will be angry when the depths and the magnitude of this criminality of cover-up is exposed. I think that a lot of heads are going to roll, or at least, at the very least, what will happen, because, you know, part of my country is just brain-dead zombies, but part of it isn't. And there will be people who are going to be fighting to get to the bottom of this, and they will be fighting for some measure of justice. And so the real issue post-disclosure politically, this is only one of many issues, will be how that all works out. Will the White House spin machine end up dominating the issue, or will independent journalists finally get enough of a hearing that will actually force a kind of, forget Occupy Wall Street, how about Occupy Area 51, Occupy the White House, Occupy Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Occupy the Federal Reserve, because all other kinds of secrets are going to be coming out. People will realize you lied to us about UFOs. Hey, maybe you did lie to us about 9/11, and maybe all those people have been talking about the Fed basically completely dominating our currency with debt-based monetary system. Maybe those people are right, too. In other words, disclosure can trigger a new version of the 1960s on, like, steroids. That's one thing. The implications go on for science. They go on for spirituality. They go on for culture. Well, I think what you'll see is young people, particularly around the world, who are going to opt out of this old system of lies. They're going to say, you know what? I don't believe your reality. It'll be like the 60s in that regard. But there'll be a scientific revolution as well. What disclosure can do, disclosure has the potential, UFO disclosure, to be the sledgehammer that slams open all the other secrets, if we're lucky.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on, and I hope you've enjoyed your little stint on the Vinnie Eastwood show there, Richard. It's been a pleasure having you.
It was a cool experience, my man.
Mm-hmm. I like to think so. Now, his website is richarddolanpress.com. That's richarddolanpress.com. That's Dolan, like D-O-L-A-N, not like the Limp Bizkit song, Dolan, Dolan, Dolan. And you can check out his radio show at kgraradio.com as well. Richard Dolan, my pleasure. Thank you very much. And we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, make a donation, or subscribe to make a regular donation so that we can keep shows like this and many others coming at you every single day. See you again sometime.